For those of you that don't know, we have exclusive content, and we just shared some just now, right before this recording. If you want to see that, go to Patreon.com/Toasty Creations or Toasty Podcast. I think it's Toasty Podcast. I'll put the link in the description. Don't worry about it. You'll find it. What's up, Toasters? Welcome to another deep dive episode of the Toasty Podcast. My name is Sky.
And I'm Maddie B.
And today we're going over societal norms and the fourth turning. We've all seen the signs, but how far are we really from a societal shift, or are we already in the middle of it? This is Society and Culture Today, so please strap in and keep all tray tables in the upright and locked position, and let's get toasty.
Let's do it.
I saw a YouTube video. This is what sparked this whole thing. So lately, before the YouTube video, before all this stuff, I've been thinking, you know, something's going on here. You know, this is crazy. For the last like 3 years, this thing's been building, and I'm like, what's the deal here? Why is America so, you know, why is there so much unrest? You know what I mean? As if there needs to be a reason for it. There's a lot of reasons for it. This led me to this idea that there is a societal shift happening, and that's what I call it. It's not, no one else, I don't think, even really calls it that. But what I was thinking is the society that we know is changing so fast and opposite, almost turning around, making a complete 180 in a way that we don't know what to make of it. And it's not good, because whenever you don't know where you're going and things are going too fast, you know, you crash. Right? So I'm wondering, where's the crash? What's this crash we're talking about? Led me to this book called The Fourth Turning. And I watched a YouTube video by Van Neustadt, pretty cool dude, brother of Casey Neustadt. I'm also doing vlogs. That's why it got me to him, because he's a vlogger. Okay. So Casey Neustadt's brother, Van, does other kind of videos on YouTube, and one of them was about this book. Well, this book basically sums up 80-year cycles of history, as if saying history repeats itself in an 80-year increment type thing. And every 20 years of those 80 years is a generation or a turning, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they call it, a turning.
Yeah.
And we're in the fourth turning, meaning Gen Z is the fourth turning of the last 80 years. The last 80 years starting somewhere in World War II, right?
And every turning happens every 20 to 25 years.
20 to 25 years.
And with each new generation comes a new era. They call the era a turning, and it's by William Strauss and Neil Howe. It's called the Strauss-Howe Generational Theory. Yeah,
otherwise it is a theory, known as guys. The fourth turning.
Yeah, it's a historical theory about American history and global history, Anglo-American history mostly. But it's pretty interesting.
I think there's a lot to be said about it as far as truth. I think there's a lot to be said about it about questions, you know, and some things that maybe aren't even really true at all, or maybe just aren't going to happen, we don't think. Mm-hmm. Before we get too deep into it, guys, be sure and go like the page on YouTube, subscribe on YouTube, also follow us on Spotify, Apple, and all that other stuff. Guys, just do what you can to help out the show. I do not use sponsors. I do not use affiliates. I try my hardest not to. I know I have some affiliates, and every once in a while I'll bring them up, like Liquid IV or Blueberry or whatever. But to be honest, most of this is supplied by me. I am the sole sponsor of this show. And so with that said, it helps us out a lot if you would share it with your friends or subscribe to it.
For sure.
Awesome.
Like, share, and subscribe.
Like, share, subscribe. So anyway, getting into this book, some things are not really true. It was written in 1997, right?
And it was actually two books.
Just two books.
Yeah, 1991, Generations, which discusses the history of the United States as a series of generational biographies going back to 1584. And then, so that's the Generations book is more about the people. And then the Fourth Turning is about the upcoming Fourth Turning. That's the 97 book. So there's one in 97, which is kind of laying the foundation for what they're about to say in 97. So pretty, like I said, it's pretty interesting. A lot of the predictions that they have in 97 kind of are very
interesting. Seem to be unraveling, if you will.
Yeah.
So I'll say this. The total title, the whole title, The Fourth Turning, An American Prophecy - What the Cycles of History Tell Us About America's Next Rendezvous with Destiny. Weird. In light of Steve Bannon's obsession with the thesis. Interesting. Yeah, dude. So basically, they observe American history shows a new era or turning about every 20 years, blah, blah, blah. I've already said all this stuff. The second turning is an awakening. Mm-hmm. The first turning – okay, let me just back up. The first turning is an upbeat era of strengthening and strengthening institutions. So that's boomers, right? That'd be that generation? Boomers is the first generation of this 80-year cycle. And they're the upbeat ones? That's like the 50s and 60s, right?
No, I think the... I don't think so. I think the... boomers are the prophet archetype. Yeah.
Well, the prophet is not the upbeat era, so this is wrong. This is saying the first turning is an upbeat era, but it's not. Isn't the first turning the prophet?
Well, the... I was going to say, I don't know which archetype goes with which cycle.
Right. When I was watching that video, Van was saying, yeah, it was like first one was prophet, I think, and then the next one was upbeat. Or maybe it was upbeat and then prophet.
This is according to the authors, the most recent first turning in the U.S. was post-World War II American. High, beginning in 46 and ending with the assassination of JFK.
The high.
Yeah.
So I guess it is probably an upbeat era then, right? Would you say?
But I thought they had a prophet. But boomers were born in a different time. 46. Sure. To, well, yeah, I guess it was 46 to 63 is boomers.
Okay, cool. So we're good. Boomers first turning.
Yeah.
The second turning is an awakening, a passionate era of spiritual upheaval when the old order comes under attack. And this all sounds like a very weird medieval like film that I'm listing off all these weird words and stuff, but trust me, it's not. It's they just try to make it as theoretical as possible. I'll make it sound like it's some crazy like Christ returning or something. Is an awakening, a passionate era, a spiritual upheaval when the old The third turning is an unraveling. And the third turning is where millennials find ourselves. Because the second turning is Gen X, right? So millennials, you know, I'm a millennial by 1 year, right? I think I'm on the last year. I'm not sure. 1994? When's the last year?
Do you know? I'm looking at it right now. So researchers and popular media use the early 1980s as the starting birth years and the mid-1990s to early 2000s as the ending birth.
Mid-1990s.
81 to 96 being widely accepted.
Dang, so I'm 2 years. Okay, so I'm 2 years, so I'm not the last of the, you know, Mohicans or whatever. I guess 96 would be.
Yeah, Gen Z starts in 97 to 2012 is what Wikipedia says.
2012? Holy crap, dude. That's a lot.
And then Generation Alpha is early 2010s to mid-2020s.
Alpha?
Yeah.
That's what we're calling it?
Yeah.
That's sketchy, dude.
So my kid will be an alpha.
Okay. That's weird that they're calling it an alpha, dude.
Yeah, it is weird.
Because what's after that, you know?
Beta.
Omega. Oh, okay.
Because it's Generation Z, I'm guessing it's just... starting over.
It's going in B. Anyway, the fourth turning is a crisis, a decisive era of secular upheaval. That's interesting. And basically their whole idea is, this actually goes back to, I think they actually went back to Roman times when they were studying for the book. I'm not positive, but they were saying that Romans were even like predicting their own like quote-unquote
historical
destiny.
Cycles. Yeah,
they were saying like we have seasons, so we have four seasons, you know, it's constant, and we have spring and summer being the rise and then fall and winter being the fall pretty much, right? Mm-hmm. the depressing times or whatever. Yeah. And they basically just expanded that similar to the way we expand time to a calendar.
Yeah,
so they were just like, okay, we have these four things, now we have these four turnings, these four 20-year increments, now we have this 80 years, right?
Yeah,
if they dumbed it down to we have 100 years of Roman Empire and they predicted it all kind of correctly with – they actually added natural disasters and stuff too. So all that stuff's kind of weird, you know, to me.
Yeah.
As far as that goes, I think it's lucky guesses, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe it's just so vague.
Weird
it's
insights, so vague, right? Yeah. You make something so vague.
It's like, oh, there's going to be heroes in the millennial generation. And then it's like, okay, yeah, there's going to be heroes in every generation, though.
Right. You're right. And like, we're supposed to be the, on this book, the way the book puts it is we're supposed to be the repair. No. The fix.
Millennials are supposed to be the hero generation.
The hero. Yeah. So I was trying to figure out how it said it. The hero generation. Civic. And then Gen X is supposed to be the repair, right? It was the backwards. No, right?
Gen X is the nomad. And then, so they build like Elon Musk, they like to build nomadic devices. Like planes, trains, automobiles. And baby boomers are the prophets.
Then, I thought he said something about someone picking up where we freaking fix, we are the heroes or whatever. Uh-huh. Someone picks up all of our mess that we make when we like totally, you know.
That would be.
Because it would make sense that it would be Gen Z, but then again.
It might be the nomads. Okay. Time of social. The nomad generations. Enter childhood during an awakening, a time of social ideals and spiritual agendas, when young adults are passionately attacking the established institutional order. Nomads grow up as underprotected children during this awakening, come of age as alienated post-awakening young adults, become pragmatic midlife leaders during a crisis, and age into resilient post-crisis elders. Examples would be the Gilded Generation, Lost Generation, and Generation X.
Yeah, so the beginning, like I said, a lot of the things that are said here are weird, right? So I'm about to read this, and it's going to sound, guys, that this is true at all, because I don't necessarily believe all of it, but the way they talk, kind of. The next fourth turning is due to begin shortly after the new way through the OO decade. Around the year 2005, a sudden spark will catalyze a crisis mood. Remnants of the old social order will disintegrate. Political and economic trust will implode. Real hardship will beset the land with severe distress that could involve questions of class, race, nation, and empire. You said it's very vague, and it is very vague, because we've had this same thing. People have questioned class, race, nation, and empire for decades, centuries.
Yeah.
That always happens. It always comes up.
Like basically since the Renaissance, they've questioned class.
Renaissance.
And class
Renaissance.
It's a French word. So.
Renaissance. They knew they'd added the emoji for that. I guess it's supposed to be snapping, but it looks like a freaking like
like the Italian,
free Italian. Oh like yeah. Okay. Yes, exactly.
A meatball.
Oh man. Sometime before the year 2025, America will pass through a great gate in history, commensurate with the American Revolution, Civil War, and twin emergencies of the Great Depression and World War II. Twin emergencies. So here we are in COVID, right? 2020 hits. COVID's going crazy, besetting the land with catastrophe. But I don't think it's big enough.
You don't think COVID is big enough?
I don't think COVID's the thing. Obviously, it wasn't because nothing really. We are now.
No, I don't think.
COVID, I think it adds to it.
I think COVID is the key that opens Pandora's box.
Oh, okay. There you go.
You know what I'm saying?
I thought you were about to say the freaking gate. This guy says
inside the box is you know
a bunch of crap that's going to lead us down socialism. And see, and that's where I don't like where this book goes is that because I think it's actually like a thing. I think it's actually like somewhat true. Uh-huh. Is that it talks about authoritarianism as if like that's what we're going to hit next kind of thing.
Yeah, we're hitting it already,
and we're hitting it already. That's why I asked at the beginning: are we in this already? Well, we are.
California is still shut down.
This societal shift that I always bring up, you know, isn't the same necessarily thing as this fourth turning. I just think they have a lot in common. When I think of societal shift, I think of where we're at now, which is authoritarianism type stuff going on. Social media, big tech controlling the flow of information. And next thing you know, we are shut down. By the way, guys, if we ever get shut down, I have a website and all of our stuff will be available there. Just a real quick plug. Sorry. I just had to tell you that. Tim Pool does it. I do it too.
Hey, well, wait. Is it on an Amazon server, though? Like 80%
of
the internet?
No, it's not AWS. It is WordPress, Bluehost, and Blueberry.
Boom.
You guys got it. Bluehost may actually use AWS, but I need to look into that. I don't think they do.
We'll have to dig a little deeper.
I have to dig a little deeper, but I don't think they do. Okay.
We'll get our own. We'll get our own.
I had to make sure you guys know that, because we are very big advocates of the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, regardless of your political stance.
All the amendments.
Regardless of your political stance. These are things that matter, and I think you need to realize that.
You can't just let them erode.
You know, there are still left-leaning people that get censored, right? That still happens. I don't know if you guys dig that deeply into it, but that does happen. And so if you are worried about getting censored and not being able to say what you want to say, even on the left, you need to be an advocate of the First Amendment. And so that's why I'm going to start backing all my crap up on my own website.
Yeah.
Dunskies, bro. Dunskies.
Exactly.
So back to what I was saying. So that leads us into this societal shift we're in. We're in it now. So
yeah, completely.
One of the big questions someone has asked me before is, how do you fix mass shootings? And that is what led me to this big switch in my brain saying, we're in a societal shift right now.
Well, you just take all the guns away. Duh.
Oh, yeah. That'll do it. I told him you can't.
What?
I told him you can't. I said you can't stop mass shootings. I said, here's why. Because where we're at right now, I don't know what happened to me, dude. I was like, this is it. This is it. This is the big thing, right? Uh-huh. All of the people that do these things are from Millennial or Gen Z, for the most part, that I've seen.
Yeah.
Okay. The commonality here is that we're in the societal shift and things are changing and people's personalities are changing. And you can't have a life coach, if you will, a psychologist for a nation. That doesn't exist. It can't exist because there's too many opinions.
Yeah, especially in America.
Right. So if you wanted to – you're saying you want to heal the mental health – of America, where does that begin? And that's whenever I was like, oh crap, this has been happening since 80 years ago. You know, I didn't think 80 years. I'm just saying that because of the fourth turning book.
Yeah.
But this has been happening for a long time.
Yeah. I would say closer to 60 years ago.
60 years. We've been building this weird thing up, and the tables are turning, and women want to be men, and men want to be boys in their rooms.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
That's where we're at. The societal shift that I always talk about right now, this is it. This is what I'm talking about. If I could say it in one sentence, yeah, women want to be men and men want to be boys. That is where we're at.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Rate of high schoolers who identify as transgender was, I want to say it was 0.1%, 15 years ago. It's a very small number. Very, very small number.
Yeah.
Now it's 2%. 2% of everybody in high school identifies as a transgender person.
15 years.
Yeah.
And see, that's another thing is history, the way this shift is going is it's progressive. And so it's not linear.
And it's
going to just ramp up.
And it's also not like those people were just scared of coming out and being trans. It's because...
pressure.
Yeah, it's peer pressure, and there's also that, when you're going through puberty, especially as a female, you're going through a lot of changes, and a lot of, your friend group, that set of 5-6 girls or whatever are all going to go through puberty at different rates.
Right.
Right?
And Melissa even said that.
There's this desire to fit in, and if you don't change, if you don't fit in, then you feel like you may have the wrong body, or you just feel out of place, or something's off or wrong. Your hormones are starting to develop and go, crazy, for lack of a better word. And you get blasted with this narrative that's, I'm trans, I'm special, I'm more because I am different, right? And then also all of your fears and your inhibitions and your worries about your self-identification will disappear once you become trans. You will find yourself
in the middle of this puberty stage, mind you.
Exactly.
All of us went through that,
and that's I think that's a lot of reason. That's why our generation went to college, was to find yourself and to find out what you want to do. Like, no, you go to college knowing what you want to do. You don't go there.
That was
to find
our downfall.
Out. Right. Exactly.
Now college is worthless.
Because you're supposed to find out who you are and what you want to do in high school, in my opinion. In Italy, you take up an apprenticeship at 13, and that's when you start to really figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life, for the rest of your professional life. They don't have identity crisis in Italy, I'll tell you that.
They don't?
No.
That's cool. But so I need to talk more about that. That's interesting that we're comparing to Italy. But, you know, all of us go through that. Going back to the puberty thing, all of us go through that stage, you know, 7th, 8th grade, 9th grade, whatever it is.
Super awkward. Yeah.
10th grade, whatever.
Trying all
we don't know what's going on.
Trends.
We don't know what's going on. We all feel like depressed. Honestly, I think like part of growing up is going through that weird depressed state.
Yeah, of course.
I think literally everyone has done that. I don't know. Obviously, I'm no expert. I haven't talked to literally everyone on earth. I can't. But the way it seemed in that in school was everyone was going through it. Weird as crap, dude.
Yeah.
Super weird. And like, you know, some people chose emo. Some people chose, you know, football. Some people chose these things to like cope.
Exactly.
You choose things to cope.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean you
change
your...
That's what's missing today is...
No cope.
All of these coping mechanisms, quote unquote, that we have today, like changing your sex.
Super permanent.
They're horribly permanent. Yeah, they're horribly permanent. They're life altering. Like they change the entire... scope of your life, not just one aspect.
The mind,
you know?
Molding. These things that you're talking about, the coping
kids
mechanisms.
Kids need hobbies. Like, that's what they need. They need hobbies. They just need stuff to do, like, not on their freaking phone. You know?
Well, that leads to another freaking problem we might be having.
What's that?
Phones being another cause, being another catalyst to this whole thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because it makes
phones, the
makes
internet,
our
social media.
Nothing to do kind of thing. Like, you know, when you're in that state and you think that you have nothing to do, but and you're bored, but really you're just. Choosing to be bored. You're choosing to
just
be there.
Only boring people are bored.
Isn't that weird? No, well, I'll say this. Growing up, I actually was the kid. I didn't want to go and play Hot Wheels. I had all these toys. I had all these things. But weirdly enough, I would go through these phases. Like, you know, a week went by where I just didn't want to do anything. I was told it was because of ADHD. I don't believe that for a second. But that weird state. And I think it was because of an attention maybe I'm proving my own point. Wowzers.
Maybe it was attention deficit.
Because I got so quick, I quickly got tired of whatever I was doing, so I just decided not to do anything because it was worthless.
Yeah.
Today, kids are looking at phones, and they think they don't want to do anything because it's worthless. Because I think ADHD was a disorder when I was a kid. Now it's not. Now it's a thing that exists in every kid.
Yeah.
That's what I think. It's not a disorder anymore. It's just kids because of what we've done. We've given them these phones and we've given them everything else to cause these attention problems.
Yep.
We are causing ADHD now. It's not just happening.
I mean, for our generation and even our parents, it was television for sure.
Right. And see, that's another justification for these people.
30-second commercials turned into 3-second TikToks. You know?
Right.
It's just getting shorter.
That's another justification for the people on our side in a way. Like I would say, well, TikTok... it's just a commercial anyway, and that's how I would argue against it. That's how I would say that it's okay, but it's not okay.
Right. Because
that's the way it's gone. It's gone downhill.
Yeah.
It's like people making you believe that you need to shampoo every day.
Yeah.
Ads, commercials, mainstream media.
Yeah.
It has always been the sole big driver of a lot of societal norms. You know, in the 30s, women washed their hair once a month. Maybe.
Huh.
And then freaking Procter & Gamble came out, and then all these other brands, freaking Johnson & Johnson, here's Head & Shoulders, Procter & Gamble, you know what I mean? That kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. No more dandruff after they had presented shampoo. So it was like this thing where you just end up going in this cycle, right? You shampoo, you condition to bring back the oils, and then you use hair product to style your hair.
Yeah, it's like strip them away,
which adds oils.
Yeah.
And then you just keep doing the same thing. And the flakiness comes from doing that. Sorry, I don't know why I went on a freaking tangent of that, but that's what I'm talking about. The commercials do that.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing that for literally a century.
Generations, yeah.
So what do you think we're going to have? We're going to have a freaking societal shift. Of course we are.
Yeah.
Because people are going to get too crazy, too fed up. Somehow, it's going to implode.
Yep.
My question that I would ask the audience, that I would ask you, is how do you think this will go? Essentially, I just want to know what you think. I want to know what you think will happen in the next, 5 years?
I think classes are going to become much more – there's going to be much more of a contrast between different classes of
people. You mean like low-income, middle class?
Yep. the middle class will become, even segments of the upper middle class will become just way less informed and educated. They're still going to get paid, but they're also not going to be that bright or independent when it comes to their logic and their thinking. And that's already happening to a large degree. That's why we have so many liberals in this country right now. It's because their attention spans are short. They don't dig into the details, and it's a social construct at this point. Your politics define a lot. I mean, it's hard to avoid politics, even on social media and in sports now.
Okay, that's one thing. Yeah, I want to hit that too, because I had a listener tell me that we talk too much about politics.
It's in everything.
My issue is society. It's in everything.
Yeah, and if you don't talk about it, then the politicians win. Then they can do whatever they want, and no one is keeping track of what they're doing.
And
it takes normal people like us. And I was going to say that it takes long form podcasts and long form discussions, and radio shows, and really listening and getting down into the weeds to understand the scope and breadth of any situation and any current, you know, political or socio economic climate.
Because if you don't listen to all of it, you get bits of it, and it's out of context, and you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that, and you literally just don't get enough or as much information.
Right.
You know, if you watch the movie instead of read the book, you know.
Yeah, you know, I'm the guy. I'm that guy, dude.
So am I. You know, and that's
love the thing. Movies. I don't read that many books.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why our attention spans are shorter, because
audiobooks, though.
We read less. Yeah, which is good if you're auditory.
But you're right about that. You're right in saying that. It's just funny because I got off that path. Like, we're out here, we're doing hour-long podcasts, and I want to talk to people, and like, talking is my thing and all that, you know? Uh-huh.
That's what it's going to take to fix.
I think that's a mind over matter situation.
Yeah.
But I was told that I would never be able to focus on anything. Right?
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing, is you gotta, it almost takes forcing yourself. And I was also gonna say, when it comes to like Maddie B's predictions for the future, I think,
oh, you heard it here first, guys.
The stark contrast that already exists in between the classes in America, which really was a lot more blended back in the 50s and the 60s and 70s. And it's become more and more stark different.
They talk about that in the book as well.
With the billionaire class.
How 50s growing. And 60s, the classes, there was most even spread of wealth we've had almost ever in the country.
In the world.
And it
for any,
it's gone.
Yep.
We don't have that anymore.
Shrinking middle class, for sure.
Came and left, dude.
Yep. Yeah. It's government intervention.
So that's the next. It's Matt Bree's prediction. Classes are going to shrink.
Classes are going
separate.
They're going to become more defined, like oil and water, and then you're going to see a basically dumbing down of the middle class and upper middle class, to where only the highest class, the top 1%, not only are they going to own most of the wealth, not only are they going to pay most of the taxes,
they're going to be the smartest ones.
They're going to be the smartest, most educated, and they're going to be
like actually.
Yeah, exactly. Most informed. Mm-hmm. And they're also, not only that, they're going to be in the most control. They're going to have all of the control. So it's going to become more, we're going to have more of an oligarchy, is essentially what I think is going to happen to the United States.
Wowzers.
And it's already happening to a certain extent. I mean, with lobbyists in Washington, D.C., I've long been a proponent of completely outlawing lobbyists.
If you guys listen to the show at all, you know Matt is not on lobbyists. Nope. He does not want that at all. And I agree with him to an extent. That's insane. Oligarchy, huh? So explain to me that. What is an oligarchy actually like?
So many people consider Russia to be an oligarchy, in which the richest people with the most connections are essentially in control of the country. Basically, it's Vladimir Putin and his circle of friends control Russia and the Russian states, and the people they vote, but their votes are pretty much meaningless. It's like a pseudo democracy. And then
why are they so happy? That's what I don't get. Like a lot of happy. Russians, like, aren't, isn't that, is it a fake polling thing? Is it fake polls?
Oh, yeah.
It's fake polls for real?
Polls are always, almost always fake. And that comes from a political science major. Like, you can phrase a question.
Polls are almost always fake.
Yeah. Yeah. You can phrase a question however you want and bend statistics and, right. and, you know, really skew things one way or the other to make sure that you get your grant for next year. So that's a big reason why I'm not a political scientist, because I was like, oh, this is.
Because you're Sheldon.
Pseudoscience. Yeah. It's just statistics that, about the polity. That's it. Political science. They should call it polity statistics is what they should call it. But
well,
whatever.
I saw a definition that was like poly was the city, right? Or something like that. And he said, here's the definition of politics. He's like, poly means city, right? Doesn't it? Is that what that means? Poly? City or town or
polity, I think, is the people.
And then he was like, ticks. You know, blood-sucking creatures that stick onto you and suck all your money away.
Yeah, pretty much.
I was like, oh, wow. That's a good definition. It was actually on Tim Pool. Shout out.
Yeah, but so that's what's going to happen. And then, yeah, it's just going to be, we're going to turn into more and more of an oligarchy, I think. Unless there is like a pretty...
There needs to be a big uprising.
Influential revolution, yeah.
So that's where I come in. That's where I want to talk about. That's one thing I really want to talk about, yeah. Actually, because... What?
No, go ahead.
Well, this book, it mentions that. It mentions that we come up and fix some shit. Millennials, uh-huh. right? Uh-huh. What do we do? What is that uprising? And I'm waiting for that next guy to be like, let's organize a group and go ham, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what can I do? Is this it? The media company? Let's freaking spread the word, dude? Like,
that's...
You know, like, I'm thinking, like, is that it? Is that the next generation of freaking warriors? Sounds dumb to say, you know?
Yeah, but the thing is...
Because we're just sitting here behind a mic.
Yeah, but we are speaking our minds, and we're not shy about anything. Like, I don't really hesitate on what I say very much. I just want to find the right way to say it. So, it's really the only time I'm hesitant is to find the words. But,
yeah. Yeah, how you say something definitely matters.
Yeah, I just because I want to be clear and I don't want to...
Trump did not... he was not proficient in how to say something. He was just proficient in saying...
He's just like a word machine gun. Whatever, just hit its target. He would just spray, you know?
Yeah, I love the guy, I think, from a distance. But, like,
yeah.
He definitely was like... Blah, 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 blah. You know, he's a funny guy.
Yeah, as a president,
then,
I think
Biden,
he did a good
job. And then Biden, like, is just gun shy, you know?
Oh, dude, Biden is like a jammed AK-47. It's just like, ah, oh, this is going to blow up my face any second now.
Yeah. It's like off. It's like, can't keep a rhythm. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Man, I was watching Ben Shapiro today. He gave a speech yesterday and was just like mumbling and you could barely understand him. And he just went off and said, gosh, he said some weird stuff.
It's dude. Interesting that the media is not pushing all of his speeches. I wonder why, right?
Well, yeah. Even Jen Psaki, there was leaked audio of her saying that, telling her staff, like, don't let Biden answer any questions.
What is up with all this leaked audio, dude? There's always leaked audio now, dude. Always. Yeah. It's crazy, man. There's leaked everything. People are all out here just like, does everyone wearing a freaking wire now? Like,
your
not
phone.
Even by the FBI. They're just like wearing, it's like, I'm going to wear a wire today. I have a lapel mic and I'm ready and I'm recording all day on my phone. Like, how, bro? And people are all into that.
I don't know. I think Project Veritas is doing some good work. That's pretty cool. Them getting CNN on.
Yeah. It is pretty sick. I kind of wish I could have someone from Project Veritas
on. They had their board meeting and got on, like, over the phone, you know? CNN had their whole board meeting and they were calling. They were like, is this Jeff Zucker? And Jeff Zucker was like, yes. And they were like, how do you feel about, being a propagandist for the Democratic Party? And just, like, in the middle of their boardroom conference call. Like, ask the president of CNN that. The founder of Project Veritas got in on their call.
Oh, my gosh.
He called them. Yeah,
what?
He called them. Yes, it's a hilarious video. And then the president of CNN, they had already said some very incriminating and damning things. And then he's just like, how do you feel about being propagandists? Like, is that okay? You know? Is that really what the most trusted name in news is really about? And Jeff Zucker's like, how did you get this number? He's just like, I got somebody on the inside, dude. Your board is not safe.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Yeah, and then another director at CNN.
That makes you feel good, though. Like, having someone that actually is on the inside.
Super. But the thing is, like, nobody sees that. Nobody even knows who or what Project Veritas even is.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
Maybe it's for the good, though.
Why?
Because if everyone did see it.
Well, it's not like somehow they wear shirts to say Project Veritas.
I know, but somehow they would like crack down on it somehow, and it would just get shut down.
No, they already have. They shut down his Twitter completely.
Really?
Took him off Twitter because he's showing hacked materials. But it's not hacked materials. It's literally just two people out in a public place. This is a different incident. The reason they banned him. There were two people out in a public place, and someone is saying something to another person out in the open. Like, it's not like a secret. It's not like a violation of a non-disclosure agreement or anything like that. So
it's money, dude. It's money exchanging hands to ban these guys on Twitter. Yeah,
they're all on the same team.
If you think that social media outlets, big tech, is not controlled by money, you are wrong.
Yeah. And the thing is, Congress and, well, I should say members of Congress and members of, I should just say the Democratic Party are going after or threatening to go after social media platforms unless they censure conservatives. They're going to say, hey, unless you squash hate speech, which is, you know, what we disagree with, then we're going to start regulating you. We're going to take away your 501c3 status.
Oh my gosh, dude. There's a difference between hate speech and speech you hate.
Yeah.
And people don't know
it. Oh, man. Yeah.
Whenever I see tons of minorities coming out and saying, this is insane, you guys are stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
When is that going to become such a big deal where we actually see it on media? I see it on small outlets. I see it on TikTok. I see it on all these little channels, you know, here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Black people, Mexicans, whoever they are, they're like, yeah, you guys are stupid, right? It's saying that people are just taking things way out of hand, way out of context, honestly ruining their own race or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're just like, okay, wow. Like, when does that become such a big deal that we explode, right?
Yeah, I don't think it'll ever.
You think it just keeps going forever, right? Because it has been going forever.
Is that what you mean? I don't think there is a fix because.
Oh, right. Well, see, that's what I'm getting at, though. There has to be something that happens and just freaking just total big reset or something. Or do you mean like we mold into this oligarchy that keeps everything the same as it is right now?
I think it's already basically.
It's already there. I know, but like, even in an oligarchy, we're still going to have all this bull BS propaganda and stuff, I guess, keep going, even though we're already there. Yeah, it just keeps going the same way.
Yeah, the whole COVID crisis will morph into the climate crisis again, and then they're going to say, oh, we have to do this, and we have to lock things down, and we have to change your way of life because of this current crisis that's happening now, and it's life or death, just like COVID, you know. It's hard to convince people that the climate is life or death, though. That's why they use the virus. It's so much faster and easier, and people buy into it a lot more readily.
Right. Right.
So it's going to go into climate change, and then they're going to say it's a climate crisis now. You know, COVID crisis, climate crisis.
We could, like, the whole world will be dead in 5 years if we don't do something now.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to say.
Yeah.
It's always what they say.
You just don't care about your children.
Right.
I do care about my children. That's why I care about the national deficit, because that's what they're going to have to pay.
Boom,
their interest rates are going to be high. Their taxes are going to be high. Their income is going to be stagnant. And their inflation is going to be high. The cost of living is going to be so much higher than ours. You know, I'm going to be like, oh, I bought my first car for $24,000. And they're going to say, wow, my first car is going to cost me 50 grand because price of cars is exponentially going up.
It'll double.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I keep holding out for this long, you know, everyone holds out for this. And we talk about this all the time. Texas will secede. We always talk about this stupid crap. But
yeah.
I keep holding out. But like, since we're already in it, we're already here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lost cause. I hate to say that. Like, I feel like it's maybe maybe a lost
really cause. Hard not to be discouraged. But that's kind of where I was coming from when it comes to like the differentiation of classes. You're going to have like the kind of the idiot class instead of like your classes being segregated based on wealth, or now it's becoming more again for some weird reason becoming more based on race, because it's easier to divide people along what you can see visibly right there in front of you. You don't necessarily know how wealthy someone is.
I think it has to do with women and men too.
Yeah, and then I think gender, divide them by sex, divide them by race, divide them by now sexual preference is a slur, so sexual orientation, whatever you want to call it.
Sexual preference is a slur?
Yeah, is what they're saying. It's a joke. It's all a joke. Anyway, just
wow.
Anyone who's been a quote-unquote marginalized person, which is anyone who's not a straight white male. Yeah, sucks to suck for us. Anyone who's been in a marginalized group, they get their own little class, they get their own little group, they get their own little protections, they get their own little benefits, and they get their own little sense of belonging. And that's where, I think that's where you're going to see a lot more division. And I think you're going to have kind of those groups, if the left gets their way, you're going to have those groups really start to congregate and segregate in their own physical areas and neighborhoods and stuff, which is kind of happening. And that's kind of the way things have been for a long time. And we were really starting to integrate and converge, especially with the internet and with suburbs. And now they kind of want to separate things back out again. And it's easier to win over groups, implicate to groups, if you're a Democrat, than it is to, if you're Republican, you're more about individualism and individual liberty and freedom. And it's harder to placate to one's sense of that, rather than saying, oh, you belong in this group, you're special, you get all this stuff, you're entitled because you're in this group and you belong somewhere. Instead of you're independent, you're on your own, you got to figure it out, just like everybody else.
They want everyone to feel like a victim. Mm-hmm. And so they have to, everyone, you know? Yep. And so they have to do all these propaganda machines to get people to feel like that.
Yep. And once they control information,
COVID was easy.
Yeah, exactly. Once they control information, most people are on social media. Most people get a lot of their news and information from social media. Once they control that, you've got the idiot class. Like, I'm just going to be frank about it, that only listens to social media and can't really think for themselves. And then you've got the independent class that's wealthier, smarter, more educated, more independent. And if you're a crook, you're going to be a Democrat because you want that control over people. And if you're in the minority, which is I think it's shrinking nationally, you're going to be a Republican. You're going to be an independent thinker. You're going to not necessarily be more focused on material differences like wealth and race.
That kind of thing kind of started.
And it's going to be more of a meritocracy instead of a spoil system.
The Republican system starting to shrink kind of happened like pretty recently. Like, yeah. Got to where I started not even saying Republican, I'm saying I'm like a right-leaning libertarian type thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so people say like I'm a moderate liberal or whatever, right? Which, yeah, it turns out, you know, means pretty much the same thing as, well, maybe not the same thing, but like open-minded, but you have individualistic views, right? Like, yeah, libertarian.
I think the most open-minded people are conservatives.
But we ended up trying to say not Republican.
Mm-hmm.
We have ended up trying not to say that because of,
it's got negative connotations.
Because it's got these negative connotations, and you want to actually have a conversation with a person. What I really want is to have a conversation with a person. So if that's what it takes, if I have to say right-leaning libertarian to get around this stupid barrier they think this label matters, fine, I will only go so far, but that doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, you're already seeding ground though. Like, that's right. saying in a debate, or in a race, you just take one step back, you know, from everybody else,
right?
And then you start the race together. It's like,
yeah, about that.
You
know, that's what I was trying to say. Is it's even in my head. So what that means is,
yep,
like,
exactly,
everyone's thinking about it, and that's why Republican class is dying.
Yep,
because we have given up that. Yep.
So real quick, here's a prime example. I hope my dad listens to this. He listens to our podcast pretty regularly.
Does he really?
Yeah. He does, yeah.
Dude, shout out to Dad. What's yeah. up?
Hey, Dad. But he, I went to dinner at his house last night with his wife and
had to make sure the camera's rolling. Go ahead.
And we were talking about Caitlyn Jenner and you know, being the next governor of California, perhaps.
Oh, bro,
interesting. Anyway, he was like, and he, okay, this is the guy that taught me how to be a conservative. He is like very conservative, you know, right? He voted, okay, I remember back, what gave it away for me that my dad was a true conservative was that in the 2000, and this is how far back I go into politics. I go back way further than this, but I remember when I was pretty young, in 2008, during the primaries, for the Republican presidential primaries, he voted for Mike Huckabee because John McCain wasn't conservative enough for him. And I was like, John McCain's not a conservative by any means.
Yeah.
You know.
Didn't seem like it.
Not at all. He's a rhino for sure.
I knew was a rhino. People saying they were backing him up just because he was Republican or whatever.
Yeah.
That was my small town.
He was the more moderate of the choices because Republicans wanted to kind of chase the middle ground. That's why they went for McCain and Romney. They were chasing the middle ground. Yeah, exactly. And they lost. Because
they were backing up just like I am when I say right-leaning libertarian or yeah, whatever.
So anyway, so back to Caitlyn Jenner. I'm at my dad's house for dinner last night, and he goes, she. And I was like, no, Dad, still a guy. Like, Bruce Jenner, just because he had this surgery and has long hair, does his nails, does his makeup, has the chromosomes and DNA of a man. He's still a man. He's an Olympian. Won the gold medal for men. You know, and I'm not going to be impolite. If Caitlyn Jenner was here right now, I call him Caitlyn, and I would say, how are you doing, Caitlyn? And I would, you know, be polite and be nice like I am to everybody. But at the same time, I'm not going to see that ground and say that he's a woman because he has this mental block, if you will.
Gender dysphoria.
Yeah, he has gender dysphoria. Right. And just like I'm not going to start talking to schizophrenic's voices in his head. Like if a schizophrenic named Fred has another voice in his head named Jimbo, I'm not going to talk to Jimbo for sure because Jimbo is an illusion of Fred's fantasy.
And it would just make it real for them.
Exactly.
They would think it's real.
Exactly.
That's how that works. Placating. It's mental health.
Exactly. And you have to... I understand that gender dysphoria is a very heavy, heavy mental disorder to deal with. But it is a mental disorder, and I think...
It can be treated differently.
Yeah, I think you really got to slow down and think about how you're going to treat it and how you're going to think about yourself. I listen to a lot of different doctors and a lot of different people that have been trans and then regretted that decision. And most of the time people are brave enough to admit that they made the biggest mistake almost anyone could make. That they always say the same thing is I was abused as a child sexually. It led me to hate myself, hate my body, and want to be as different as I possibly could, because let's say I was abused as a young boy. If I become a young girl or a girl, I won't get abused anymore. You know, stuff like that. And a lot of that identity crisis can be solved, you know, according to popular culture today, by being trans.
Right.
And that's a problem.
There's a lot of problems today.
Just
all leading to this big thing.
Our coping mechanisms are getting worse and worse. Yes. Is what it is.
Yeah, they're getting way worse. Yeah. I agree with that. And, you know, of course, there's always the narrative that, you know, Roman Empire fell or whatever whenever everyone started the gender thing, right? Uh-huh. Does that happen in Roman Empire as well? They're like, oh, we're going to play with genders now, pretty much. They're thinking.
They basically got too theoretical and less real, less traditional. And I'm not a traditional person. I went to Texas A&M. I don't even have a ring. I'm a 2%er for sure. I'm not a traditional person.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't say, you know, normally you meet somebody and they're like, oh, yeah, I went to Texas A&M.
They say gig him and whoop and all that crap. No, I never did that.
I didn't know he went to Texas A&M until I asked him what he did. And I asked him why he went to college, because I wanted to talk about why college isn't worth it. And he said, I went to Texas A&M, and I was like, oh, shit. Then he said, you graduated, and I was like, damn. Now, I didn't even know that, though. Normal people that come from Texas A&M are like, that's all they can say. It's a big deal to them. It's a big deal to graduate from that school.
It is a big deal to graduate from that school, for sure.
It's like, okay, man, very cool, very cool. And you can talk to somebody and get a job like that.
Uh-huh.
Like, because everyone's like in it, you know?
You see the ring.
Yeah, if your boss is
out. Bump rings, be like, oh, yeah, I don't even need to do the interview.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, next guy comes in with a, you know, burnt orange shirt, like an idiot. I'm just kidding.
All that to say, okay, see, now you're doing it. All that to say, he's not usually that much of a placate to A&M
type guy. Yeah, I'm not a traditionalist. Like, me and my wife, we lived together for 4 years before we got married.
Right.
I'm not like a traditional conservative.
Right.
I'm open-minded, and I go, oh, wow, being fiscally conservative and socially conservative is really just a prudent life move, you know? And a lot of people find that out way too late. They or do. Just not at all because they're so entrenched in that.
So that technically would be like you're an open-minded mindset. Conservative, so you're a liberal conservative? See, that's another thing I hate about liberal being changed. I'm a classical liberal. Classical liberal, is that what that's called?
Mm-hmm.
Not moderate liberal? What's a moderate liberal then?
A classical liberal is someone basically who is open-minded to different philosophies.
Right.
And a moderate liberal is like in the modern American political spectrum would be like someone it's a scale on the modern American political spectrum. It's that's one thing, and then classical liberal is the definition all on its own.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Romans and Greeks were classical liberals.
Right. Makes sense. They want to know things. They're wanderers. They are explorers. They are open to things, right? But they still have their values and their virtues, and they hold them, right?
Exactly.
And that's interesting. And I don't know. I don't know what I am anymore. I just go with the flow, honestly, at this point.
Yeah.
I know what I think, and that's about all I got, you know?
Ever since I figured out, like, what a libertarian was, I've always said I'm a libertarian-leaning Republican.
Right, and I get that, and that's why I say right-leaning libertarian. Uh-huh. I should just say Republican, I guess, libertarian-leaning Republican, because I'm not full libertarian by any means.
Yeah.
There are some things that are a little bit extreme.
I'm damn close.
But we're close? Yeah, sure, close.
I mean, I'm like, name a sector of the economy, and I'll tell you why it should be privatized, like, completely. Like, government off.
Right. I had a discussion with a lady that talked to me about healthcare and why she's like mad that it's too privatized. And I was like, it's not, you know, it's not privatized, right? Like, I was like, you know that
it's half and half.
There's a lot of hands and I was like, there's a lot of hands from the government inside of healthcare. Yeah, but they still have their companies and they still run that company. Well, I'm like, no, but I don't think you understand what I'm saying. It's like 50% control government.
Yeah.
So the decisions that are being made are not just because of
prices, the company. Regulations.
Prices, regulations, pharmacy prices hiking up. Like, all that stuff is not just the company. Anyway. I
mean, the FDA.
Right, FDA. Like, yeah, exactly.
Several bureaucracies you have to deal with, FDA, CDC.
I just want
to
lay this down real quick before we end it.
Okay.
So that was a badass episode. I loved it. That was really good.
Yeah.
Just to spite YouTube and whoever else wants to watch. The vaccine is actually not FDA approved.
Which one?
The vaccine for COVID is not FDA approved.
Pfizer, Moderna, J&J? Right.
They are. It's an emergency clearing.
Ah.
What that means is that it's still being tested. I just want people to know that.
100 million Americans.
I just want people to know that. Okay, so whenever you think, why can this happen? That's the reason that they are actually able to ask you for a vaccine. Because if it's not FDA approved, it's not a HIPAA violation.
Oh.
Isn't that weird?
Whoa.
So I was asking one of my friends that works in the pharmacy, and he's like, yeah, it's actually the reason that it's not technically illegal for them to ask you. That's why Governor Abbott had to make an executive order saying you can't ask for this vaccine.
Wow. I didn't even realize he did
that. Isn't that weird? Wow. He did, yeah. He came out. It was like a speech he did. It was all on the internet, video and everything. He's like, Americans should not be asked this, basically saying it infringes on your freedoms.
Oh, COVID passports.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know if he actually signed anything. I don't know if it went
anywhere. No, there was an executive order saying, I remember this, that
it was a little bit different than I said.
It's for the state. Like, if the state cannot ask you.
Correct. Texas itself. It was executive order for state.
Businesses can ask you all they want. I mean, you can always say F off, but.
Right. And so, just so you guys know, it's technically not a HIPAA violation because it's not FDA approved. Huh. There, I said it. I'm done with the vaccination thing. I just wanted to get that out there because that's the truth.
Yeah.
And people need to hear the truth.
The real, my opinion on the vaccine is it seems very safe.
I think we're almost it. Go ahead.
It seems very safe. It seems extremely effective. If you are vulnerable or if you hang out with people that are vulnerable, go ahead and get it. You're not going to get hurt by doing it. If you're young and you're healthy and you don't feel like you're in a risk pool, then you may, like Joe Rogan, you may not need to have it immediately. You may not even need to have it at all.
Make your decision there.
Yeah, it's like the flu shot. You know?
It's your health. You are dealing with your health and you know your body, I think.
Yeah.
You personally should know your body and what it feels like. And you know what? There you go.
Yeah. I got COVID, got over it pretty fast. My wife did not get over it as fast.
And you have an autoimmune disorder.
Uh-huh.
Boom. That's just it all. All right. That's enough about that. So, guys, I love it that you're here. I love it that you listened. I know this was a long episode. It was a deep dive. We just wanted to talk about society and culture for once because I know I say that it's politics, society, and culture.
Got into it.
All together. And if you guys haven't, please like, share, and subscribe. Share being the biggest one. Please, please share this. The only way we can grow is if you share with other people and your friends. And I sponsor my own podcast, so there's really not much else I can say.
Man, Patreon helps.
Patreon helps. Patreon.com/toastypodcast.
It takes a lot of good lights to make this guy look as handsome as I do on the screen.
Oh my gosh.
He's like a miracle worker when it comes to like making me even look presentable. So
I appreciate that. Anyway, so yeah, patreon.com/toastypodcast. You can go there and you get exclusive content when you do. We are literally everywhere. Please just search the Toasty Podcast on Google and you will find YouTube, Spotify, Apple, and everything else. As always, stay toasty.
Stay toasty, everybody.